Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tuesday night discussion group. We'll be discussing Steve Ozenich's book, The Great Pain Deception. We're in chapter 12 this week, and it's about symbolic attacks. And we'll be reading the next chapter right after it, which is called
Steve-O, Do I Have TMS?
Correct. Steve-O, Do I Have TMS? And here's the deal, guys. We have been having some great discussions. Folks have been getting so much out of this that they are actually getting to work through the week with what they learn on here. So it's helping a lot of people that call in. So I want everybody to know that this discussion group is really getting powerful, being able to move in that area. And it's been that way for a while. So I just want to thank everybody for being here tonight, because without y'all, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. We'd be talking about it, believe me. But y'all make everybody here makes this a powerful something that's going to last forever. I believe in my heart. It's going to go on and help a lot of people. Okay. So with that being said, I need to give the main disclaimer before we start. I do need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. And with that being said, Bruce is always great at giving the summary. So, Bruce, if you don't mind, buddy, go ahead.
Well, as Herbie just said, we're covering in our discussion this evening Chapter 12, Symbolic Attacks, and Chapter 13, what was that you said? Steve-O, Do I Have TMS?
Yeah, that's
the second most common question he says that he's been asked. I wonder what the first one is. He doesn't say. What is TMS? Maybe that's the first question.
Yeah, I would assume so.
We're covering both of those chapters on symbolic attacks and how you can tell if you have TMS. Steve gives us some hints, or a list, actually a checklist, that he calls the Do I Have TMS checklist. The first chapter that we're covering, chapter 12, is symbolic attacks, and it involves the conjunction of mind, body, and symbolic suffering, and gives examples of same. Psychotherapist Lisbeth Marcher at the Body Dynamic Institute in Denmark has spent 3 decades studying body dynamics. She has discovered that every muscle is correlated with psychological functions or issues, even mapping the correlations out through body dynamic analysis. It sounds like one of those medieval diagrams of Adam Kadmon, the primeval man. Well, that's where this kind of knowledge originates, or was originally dealt with.
Who is that guy? Who is Adam Kadmon?
Adam Kadmon, he is the original Adam in the Pentateuch, in Genesis, as interpreted by the medieval Kabbalists, who drew a diagram of him and then superimposed different states of consciousness over the body, like the heart, Tifereth, Chokhmah, Bina, the masculine and feminine principles, and it's sort of like they were already looking at what the scientific world, the scientific world of psychiatry started looking at the end of the late 19th century. But I could go on and on about that. But that's who Adam Kadmon is. And that's what psychotherapist Elizabeth Marcher is talking about. She has discovered that every muscle is correlated with a psychological function or issue, even mapping the correlations out through body dynamic analysis.
Well, could you stop right there just a minute, Bruce? Did everybody hear what he just said with that sentence? Would you say that sentence one more time, Bruce?
Yeah, it's pretty important. It's
Very important.
Elizabeth Marcher has discovered that every muscle is correlated with a psychological function or issue, even mapping the correlations out through body dynamic analysis. And I was talking to my acupuncturist the day before yesterday, actually yesterday, and we were agreeing about this because he's found empirically using his needles, he can access different parts of consciousness in the brain via poking or different areas of the body. And according to his system, all of the different anatomical parts of the body correlate to different aspects of repressed emotionality, like fear in the aural kidney, in that area in the lower spine, pain in the back of the legs. I don't know the whole system, but it's kind of like, it's from ancient China. And it's a lot of this ancient knowledge, these ancient, occult systems were dealing with this kind of thing. And that's interesting in that Steve prefaces this chapter on symbolic attacks with a quote from John Lee, Facing the Fire. The part of your body where you have stored your anger is the part that has to express it. It may be the calves or anger. And Steve riffs on this, and he says, the barking cough becomes the acceptable manner in which to yell publicly, the yawn a silent shout of disapproval, the cold a socially acceptable fashion in which to cry, the limp a physical expression of self-pity.
The code. I haven't had a code in like 2 or 3 years now, but I would get a code just about like everybody else. Every time I get code, I would wind up getting a code. Okay, I didn't always say I was going to get them and all that, but I would get one, and I associate it with germs and other people. So, but anyway, what you just read there, so that could have been a way for me to cry. To show emotion unconsciously, maybe?
Well, that's just what Steve says, according to what he's learned from his own experience. And it sounds like that correlates with all of these other ancient knowledge uh-huh. systems of knowledge.
Or possibly that's just true for one person. I mean, it's... I can imagine from talking to TMS therapists, one does occasionally hear stories of these striking parallels between specific body areas that are where the symptoms are, and you know the psychology which is creating it. But I suspect that it's like the symbolism in dreams, where it's different for other people. Or for different for different people. And so, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting question that we may want to talk about is this, you know, is the kind of the symbolic language of symptoms different for different people? Like, does a cough mean crying for some people or anger for someone else? That's kind of an interesting question.
Yeah, or is it arbitrary and determined by the conditioning process that went on when you started to associate these different areas with emotions in your psyche, buried in your brain somewhere, I guess. We're getting off into neuroscience today, I see on the forum. but Steve comments on that about the cold being a socially acceptable fashion in which to cry, the limp, a physical expression of self-pity. He goes on and says, the modern disease becomes a modality by which to fit in with society's woes and into the collectively agreed upon reality. And that sounds very much like the way PPDs are passed on through a collective consciousness of the patients and the whole population, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this collective agreed upon reality. It may be wholly arbitrary, but then it gets spread, doesn't it?
Yes, Jay had a question there. What's up, Jay?
Yeah, Bruce, are you saying that the muscles in our body, certain parts of our body, in any or all muscles, are maybe making some kind of subconscious deal with our brain to hurt and to be in pain rather than feel the emotion.
Yep. And I think that's what Steve's saying. You hit the nail on the head there.
Okay. Okay, good. Great.
And,
this?
And Steve goes on to give all kinds of examples of these mind-body symbolic equations. He talks about TMS author Fred Amir, who hated commuting, and so he developed numbness in his foot, in his the foot that went down on the gas pedal. And in Basic Principles of Psychoanalysis, A.A. Brill, M.D., writes of a woman who had developed pain in her arm. The onset of symptoms occurred when a man she wanted to marry, of whom her family disapproved, touched her arm when she expected him to propose. And Steve thinks that this was internal anger that turned to pain. I guess the frustration of that moment must have been a lot of tension. She was getting pulled in different directions, wasn't she? By her parents' negative expectation, opinion of the man she obviously loved, who then wouldn't step into the batter's box and hit a home run. He wouldn't pop the question. So she became very angry at that. And then...
That's an anchor. That would be called an anchor in psychology. It's where something happened. Yeah, it's where something happened, and when it happened, there like something traumatic a little bit. It don't have to be very traumatic, just a little bit. And when it happened, like maybe you heard a bell go off, or maybe you might have been hearing a song at the time, and then years later you hear that song again, and that same emotion comes back to you. You feel it. You might go through that same sickness that you felt that day when you heard that anchor, or we call it or a trigger. Or when you heard that trigger, then you'll have that same emotion come back on you. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it sounds like Marcel Proust in Remembrance of Things Past, that event that took place in the garden with the girl when the protagonist was six. And throughout his life, it keeps re-echoing because the emotion keeps coming back and he remembers a different aspect of what went on in the garden, according to the trigger. And of course, Proust chronicles that for a good 20 years and asks all kinds of questions about how we remember emotion, how emotion and memory correlate. Pretty important book there, Remembrance of Things Past. Of course, he'd read Freud too. Proust had read Freud.
Freud is tremendously influential. Yeah. I love that idea about, sorry to interrupt that.
Oh,
do you want to continue?
Well, you have something good to say. You always do.
I don't know. I just really like that idea of an anchor, and it seems like what Herbie brought up about the anchor is maybe that's a really good way to understand why these various symbolic areas are where we get our TMS, is because these areas do have these powerful unconscious associations with past memories that may still be around.
Well, you know, like Eliot says, dare I between the T and Isis, dare I provoke the moment to its crisis? Are you saying that it's at these moments of high emotional intensity that this anchoring can occur? Because obviously...
No, it could just be a song. It could just be a song, it could be a sound, some kind of bell going off. I'm not talking about the Pavlov dog, but it is something like that. It's a trigger. And when you hear that, say that song, when you hear that song go off, all of a sudden you start crying because your girlfriend broke up on you that day and that song played, you know? But it does get, you know, all the way out there to where somebody could just touch you on the arm. And it can get the whole emotional trauma onto
but do you
right
think
there.
That you can become, that these... triggers can be associated more easily with events that are on a high emotional level. Like this lady was waiting for him to pop the question And she
was the higher the emotional level, yeah, like 911. The higher the emotional level, yeah, the more so that the event will be
the more susceptible you are to this kind of conditioning.
Exactly. And it can happen like that quick.
Yeah, and then the trigger will keep, and you'll keep responding to it that same way again and again, and going back into that emotions, that emotional complex.
Until you understand how to reverse it, correct.
So just like as an example, when I was, I first started getting kind of RSI symptoms when I was working on my PhD thesis, you know, typing it up the computer. So could that also be, and then like, you know, now even if I'm just whatever, doing something that, you know, has no kind of charge or stress in it at the computer, I might still experience those symptoms. Could that be like an example?
Yeah, well, I know how amped up you are in a PhD program. You're
right, exactly.
You're really susceptible. I can remember after I passed my orals, which were like was like having a nervous breakdown, very much like it, and waking up another day and I was like reborn. You're in quite a state when you're doing that sort of thing, and
exactly,
it must mean
yeah.
that you're the what endoplasticity. Your brain must be very susceptible to conditioning during that time, I would think. Yeah, that high moment, you know.
I think that conditioning is definitely the right word there. That, you know, your brain learned that those symptoms were a great way to distract you. And it taught itself to have those symptoms whenever it needed them. And as Bruce is saying, neuroscience has come up. One of the things that we've learned from neuroscience is that memories stick much longer during, or our memory improves, and memories stay longer when they're formed during periods of high emotional power. When your feelings are very strong, you remember things for a long time. I will never forget, you know, where I was when Kennedy died, people say, or when I heard that Kennedy died. That type of thing, because it's such a big deal. When Hervey was saying anchors, it reminded me of crayons. Has anyone ever smelled the smell of crayons?
I can still smell them. You mentioned it. I smell them right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're right back in first grade, aren't you? When you smell
them. Yeah. I'm thinking about eating one. I'm thinking about chewing up on one. Could never swallow.
Well, we used to chew them all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but that smell, you know, as soon as he said crayons, that smell, so there's the trigger right there, you know.
I know in my group, anyone who chewed crayons was socially ostracized.
I was.
Immediately labeled.
Yeah, it was first grade. They gave me a hard time. Of course, all my buddies were eating them, so. Anyway, go ahead. We'll get on
to
that.
Another example.
That's a good example.
Another example that Steve gives of the mind-body symbolic connection is the American author Mark Twain, you know, Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, everything.
Yeah, we love Mark Twain.
The Gilded Age. And he says that in the 1890s, Mark Twain was beset with chronic debt after the collapse of his fortune. And he wrote a book he didn't really want to write entitled The American Claimant, 1892. Twain hated it, Steve says. And as Steve puts it, it rebelled. And he soon developed a pain in his writing arm. Twain switched to his other arm to write, and then it began to hurt. And he said, I don't know if he says this. Steve talks about it. He thinks this is an early example of symptom substitution, and then he was forced to finish the book by dictation, and this sounds very much like Forrest's own experience, his own biography. You were reduced to dictation, weren't you, at some point?
Oh my goodness! Reading that thing about Mark Twain was just like my life. I think back when I was. And my RSI pain from typing started when I was around 16. And then maybe when I was 19, it extended to mousing. And, you know, I only use a mouse with my right hand, so it was only my right hand that was particularly bad. Of course, I did exactly what Mark Twain did. I didn't use a quill or, you know, whatever he used to wrote, to write, or fountain pen. So I switched my mouse over to my left hand, and sure enough, my mouse was just as, my left hand was just as sensitive as my right. And then I got in a lot of stress, lots of transitions in my life, and I started, I had a job testing software. I hated that job. It was boring. Does that sound familiar? Boring jobs that you hate and stress you out. Total cause of TMS. And that's when all I learned to live with my typing TMS, and it jumped to my thumb. And whenever I hand wrote, my thumb would just, I would get this terrible writer's cramp. And so I switched, I taught myself how to write lefty. And how long do you think it took before my left hand started hurting too? Same exact thing.
Couple days.
And then this is a classic thing. Yeah, I forget exactly. It wasn't, yeah, maybe it wasn't a couple days. It was a couple weeks. But I mean, my left thumb should have been perfectly healthy. And it's not like I was writing that much. I couldn't bear to write that much. Writing lefty is hard. It's slow. But somehow, you know, that thumb just started hurting again. And it reminds me a lot of the whole symbolic thing here, where how does the unconscious mind choose where it's going to attack, what it's going to take away from you? In my case, it was like these abilities were taken away. How does it choose what to take away? It chooses what's going to scare you the most. Because that's going to be the most distracting. That's going to get you focused on your body. There's another story. So I know a lot about people who have issues from using computers. I like Deepster. That's kind of my experience. And a lot of people, as Bruce alluded to, they type a bunch and then it begins to hurt, and the doctors say, oh no, you can't type anymore, you have to stop typing, you're going to get worse. And so they say, well, I can't stop typing, and they get terrified, of course, and they get focused on their body, because that's what TMS is about.
Well, ain't that what they say for us? Ain't that what the doctors tell you when you got RSI, that you're going to have to stop typing and leave it alone for this
that's
big
what they
amount
told me.
Of time?
Yeah.
Deepster shaking his head. Yeah, okay.
And so a lot of it switched to dictation, and then we get problems in our throat. And I had a sore throat for about 6 months, and I had people sticking things down my esophagus, checking to see if, you know, gastroenterologists sticking stuff down my esophagus to check acid levels, and of course it all came up negative. So those symptoms can really jump around.
The symbolism there would be the white coat from the doctor, would it not be? It would be the doctor's wisdom. And we've always known that when we went to the doctor, if they said this is what it is and you need to follow this protocol, then we went by it. And if they said, well, this is going to happen later in the week, and if you do this, this is going to happen, and it always happened. But wouldn't the symbolism there, wasn't there something there that when you saw that white coat, I mean, it just told you that this doctor was right, you know, in the past. Before we
it
learn about
powerful.
TMS,
yeah,
that white coat, that doctor coming in there, it's a symbol. Yeah.
Yep.
An authority too, you know, someone you want to believe in, and also you've got all these reinforcers, your parents when you're a kid saying, "Now you do what the doctor says and follow the protocol, and then you're being good, and taking your pill at the right time, and you know." Getting some bed rest, and you get all kinds.
Is anybody? Go ahead, Bruce. I want to see if anybody else has got some words.
Steve concludes about Mark Twain's case with just a real brief comment. He says, "So much for doing what you don't want to do," and you can imagine Mark Twain going broke, and then just really going broke. Like living the high life, being one of America's richest men, and then suddenly he's reduced to poverty, and he's trying to write his way out of the hole. You think of the pressure in that kind of intense situation.
Rage.
Speaking from having gone broke before, I know I turned my attention to writing an article on the origins of modernism that was going to get me a academic preferment, And boy, did I write. Oh, my God. When you're going broke, you really get intense about writing. It means a lot because you think the magic hieroglyphs are going to turn the key and change your situation. And I think, what's it, Robbe-Grier, the French novelist, calls it writing degree zero. I could just imagine how much Mark Twain was bearing down in that situation when he'd lost his fortune and had to climb back out. And no wonder he started getting these psychogenic symptoms, these PPDs. And especially when he was doing something he really didn't want to do either, going against the grain.
That builds tension there, like Forrest said earlier about having a job you don't want. I mean, gosh, could you imagine all the people that, you know, if they really knew what these jobs were doing to them? Don't get me wrong, I understand all of us have to take jobs to pay the bills. But when you have to stay on something 20, 30, 40 years and you really don't want to be there, with us knowing about TMS, could you imagine what that's causing, you know, in people's, you know, bodies, you know, the pain that is screaming out, you know, I want to go, but you never listen to it, or somebody's never exposed.
Well, I don't think it's any accident that lower back pain and PPDs occur in modern Western culture, where people have jobs like that that involve stress and boredom on a daily basis, along with a boss who tries to convince them that they're not really worthy, so they don't have to pay them any more money. And the job, boss's job becomes lowering their self-esteem on a daily basis so they'll accept their fate. And also why PPDs only occur in, well, they're concentrated in the United States, the G9, Western Europe, and Japan. If you're an Aborigine in Australia, I bet you don't get lower back pain because everything is very primary.
There was these studies about, where is it that whiplash doesn't happen? Maybe it was
Lithuania.
Lithuania, there you go. No,
whiplash
no.
Whiplash doesn't happen anywhere where whiplash isn't paid for.
Also, they don't know about it either. It hasn't become part of the collective body of wisdom that everyone has in Lithuanian society. You know, like somebody gets hit in the United States from behind at 5 miles an hour in a parking lot, and immediately their mind races with all these thoughts about whiplash and liability and litigation and filling out the accident report and so on, and their space being violated. But you notice there are all these things that everyone accepts as real wisdom, and they're really collective folklore or mythology, like whiplash.
Has Enjoy, you got anything you want to say about the symbolic attacks?
Yeah, let's get some more voices in here. There's been some great, great discussion amongst the ladies in the chat room at TMS Wikidata.
Yeah, we're having a lot
of fun. Already.
Well, I just wanted to say one time I was walking out of Walmart and I'm 68, so this is when I was about probably 55, and I'm walking out of Walmart and it was really icy and somebody hadn't, properly done the sanding or whatever they should have been doing. And, so I went just, ass over tea kettle, as an Australian would say, and I'm lying there on the ground and everybody's rushing up to me, and you wouldn't believe the number of people who wanted, you got to sue Walmart, right? And I was already into TMS, and I knew that is a slippery slope. And the manager came rushing out, and he picked me up, and I said, don't worry about it. I'm not going to sue you. It's a slip and fall, big deal. And I went home. And I was a little sore for a day or two, but, you know, no whiplash. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine these things really do happen, but if there's a monetary gain, or the culture says that if you fall, you're going to be miserable, and you know all this stuff, then it just makes it 100% worse.
You know, it's
yes,
funny.
It does.
Actually, that reminds me of something that came through the SERPA mailing list. There's a TED talk, or maybe a TEDx talk, about the negative effects of stress. And there's basically a study that shows that, you know, stress affects you negatively. I think they were just looking at, you know, life expectancy, only if you believe it does. And if you don't believe that it affects you negatively, then you actually don't get any of the harmful effects of stress. So even if you're under a lot of stress, then you know, you don't get the narrowing of the arteries and things like that.
Without belief, you have, you have to have that belief.
They interviewed, I think it was tens of thousands of people across the United States, and asked them, you know, are you under a lot of stress? Like, how much stress are you under? And then, do you believe that stress is harmful for your health? And they found that the stress was a predictor of lower life expectancy, only in the case that people actually believed it.
Wow, that's good. I like hearing that.
Elegantly done, that, you know, because they weren't putting any placebos or nocebos in people's heads. They just asked a simple question, and then over the next 5 or 10 years, they monitored how many people died and then correlated it to that's their right. answers. So it was a really sweet little study.
I like that.
I'll just see if I can. I'll just paste the link.
Thank you.
On the forum.
Yeah.
Good. A Montana mom was fishing to say something, I believe.
Oh, well, the one story. And I'm sorry, what is your name, the other lady from Canada?
Enjoy.
Hi.
Oh, Enjoy. Hi, Enjoy.
Hi.
Instead of thinking of the lady who had the neat story. Your
she's
story,
our big bundle of joy.
About 3 years ago, and this is before I realized TMS, I was still in the fits of going from. I had just finished a round of my latest crisis, which was a blown Achilles tendon and a shin splint. I had just been discharged. I was fine. The next day, I was leaving Dollar General, had a trip and fall, landed on my other knee. Ended up limping back to the PT the next day. And he's like, "What are you doing here?" And there we go again, another 6 months of therapy. And I've thought about that. And I look back now through the lens of TMS and I'm thinking, wow, I think I set myself up for that. I don't think it was such a, you know, a structural, I tripped over something.
Freudian would call that unconscious intentionality. Classic example of it.
Okay, well, I look back at that now, and I mean, that launched into a whole, actually almost another year of physical therapy. And of course, I look back at all that stuff. It's like major TMS written all over it. Uh-huh. So that's really
interesting. When you're getting over a major accident, it seems like just when you're over it, there's a real likelihood of having another accident. Maybe I'm just superstitious, but it seems like there is like a weakness at that point that can be exploited and having another episode. I've seen it happen to people, certainly.
And it was funny because I landed on my other knee. And so, you know, the one leg I just finished rehabbing, and, you know, it was almost like this creative symptom imperative of, you know, I had to find another weak spot to get.
Can you relate a symbolic experience maybe to that, Montana Mom?
Yeah, I think so. Wondered even with what you were saying, is it Bruce about the symbolism? You know, I've wondered because a lot of my pain had started out with a shin splint. I mean, I was doing great. I was very active physically and enter a period of stress. And I can't help but wonder, I've looked at some of Louise Hay's stuff and the correlations trying to suss out, you know, what was going on. And I don't know, for me, I think it was a fear of moving forward and anxiety of moving forward. And I needed my medical drama going on after I had finished that one round of PT. And then I had the trip and fall. It was like, I needed more medical drama because that other thing had kind of quieted down and I needed another, another distraction. So
you see the positive effect of it. So you see the good intent, right?
I think so. Yeah. It's still, this is all still pretty new stuff to me. I got my first Dr. Sarno book on September 3. So I'm doing a lot of thinking and reflecting and trying to suss out things, but not trying to do it too hard, you know?
Yeah. You pick it up real good, though.
Yeah, well, it's been this form and you know, in true TMS style, I'm gung-ho when I jump in with both feet. So.
I love reading your posts.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Forrest. Well, I sure appreciate you guys. It's really fun to have a face and a name to go with all faces now when I read your posts.
Awesome. You have come so far in such a short period of time. You're doing great. You're doing great, Montana Mom.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Forrest?
If I can just call something out, speaking to someone else who's doing wonderfully, I just wanted to... It's so nice to see people making progress when they get the core insights. Panda Girl in the chat room is saying, I just think there's so much wisdom in here. I'm learning to relax into the symptoms, and they are diminishing. Fear is such a component of TMS for me. That's a simple statement, but learning to relax into the symptoms, because TMS, it's a mind-body condition. It starts in the mind and goes down to the body. And if you can calm that mind, you can calm the body. I just wanted to highlight that.
That's awesome, though, Forrest. She's learning to relax into the symptoms. That is a powerful clause. How can you know, a lot of people, they're in pain. How do you relax into the symptom? It takes some conditioning. It takes some time. It takes a skill. And she's gotten a skill there, and she calls it relaxing into the pain. I would call it focusing. I don't know if that's the same thing, but wow, that's amazing, man. Mandy's doing great. Panda Girl.
That's great. You know what I love about this whole journey so far is just the synchronicity of how all this has been coming together for me over the last year, you know, between reading John Kabat-Zinn stuff and doing some of his meditation, and, you know, then I'll hear somebody else reference something else. And then it's just really cool the way it all comes together. And even in the forums, I'm hearing an overlap of different things that I think have pointed me to this point.
I'm going to interrupt you, Montana Mom. I hate to be, I'm kind of the nasty whip cracker here.
That's quite all
right. I think just as you were starting to talk, I think maybe someone might have turned on a speakerphone or something, because I'm beginning to hear an echo. So if you turned on a speakerphone or your speakers about a minute ago or 30 seconds ago, please turn them off, and then I'll let you finish, Montana Mom. I didn't mean to break your to break your flow.
No worries. No, that's fine. That's basically all I was going to say. I think it's really cool how it's like the universe conspires to help if you just lend your ear to it and listen, and just to see these different voices from different different walks of life and different sources speaking the same thing. It's like, wow, this is really cool stuff.
It is cool stuff.
I like that. Okay, I'm going to unmute some people so I can see if anybody else has got anything that they would like to, any questions or any symbolism, something that might be symbolic. Like, I'm going to give an example. To me, something that was symbolic to me when I first started in my recovery is very symbolic, because I've always loved to work out. I've always loved to lift weights. I've always loved to go out there, look at those weights, hear those sounds ring when the plates hit each other and all that. I've always loved all that. Okay. After I got hurt, after I had to lay in bed for over a year, after I started regaining my strength through TMS healing, I'd go out there and look at those weights. Just by looking at them, I'd start hurting. Okay. And then months went by, and I would go out there and I would work out as the pain was lessening. I would work out, but still, you know, here it is a long time later, and I still got some symbolic, you know, parts to working out. I work out regular. I work out okay, but every now and then I wake up stiff. But I know when I go out there and I look at those weights, there's a part of me that says, you don't want to bend over that way. You don't want to do that deadlift. You don't want to do that because you know it's going to hurt you. But I know how now to listen to those things and make them nonchalant, you know. But, you know, there at first, that was a major symbolic thing to me. It was when my beautiful set of weights that I've always loved to work with, they were actually fearful to me. They were actually scary to me. And it would actually create pain before I would even actually start exercising. I think Bruce can relate to that.
Herbie, that you have unconscious associations with the weights, not just the fear of, oh no, I'm going to do the weights, but like just being near the weights or encountering them, triggering
yes.
pain. Yeah.
In the past, it was triggers, it was anchors, it was the whole nine yards there, you know. And I look at the weights, and just a picture of the weights it was like a symbol, it was symbolic.
It's like people who get allergies when you show them a picture of flowers.
Yeah, or somebody that gets allergies.
I do have a symbol when I think about a car seat or a truck seat.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. You told us that story about how, you know, you had this. Will you tell that? You want to tell that story, Jay?
Me? About,
yeah, you. Why it's a symbolic? Why it's symbolic to you?
Because for 35 years, I've not been able to travel really well, even at my best. Now, when I recovered before, some 20 years ago from using TMS material, I still never did get to the point where I could really travel well in an automobile. And as Dr. Sarno says, what could be more benign than sitting? And I can't figure it out, but I can take like an old office chair in a doctor's office where the low back part is cut completely out and it does not touch your low back. I can sit in that seat for hours comfortably, but I can get in a recliner where anything is putting any pressure, whatever, I mean the slightest amount, on my low back, and it'll start hurting within 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's very much like what Dr. Sarno talks about, where a back pain patient, if he walks on hard linoleum, his back will hurt. But if the back pain patient walks on a soft floor, then he doesn't feel the pain because of the softness. It's like that quality of softness, that mental state acts as a reality for you, for the TMS. It believes that standing on a soft rug is going to stop the hurting. And that's that kind of psycho-symbolic sort of thing, because it's only symbolically soft. You're still putting your body weight on your spine when you stand on a rug or if you stand on linoleum. There's no difference in the weight, the amount of weight that's being exerted on your lower back. It's still right. Whatever you weigh, you know.
Or another way of looking at it would be it's conditioning. So we're like Pavlov's dog, where you know, we see a certain thing, we see a picture of a truck seat, we see the weights, and it creates a reaction in our body.
Mm-hmm. And I find myself envying people who can travel for miles and miles comfortably and enjoy the traveling and the view and this sort of thing, like my wife can. And then I resent the fact that I cannot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've certainly had kind of similar thoughts of envy, you know, because like I can't do this thing that I really want to do. And before I had TMS, right. It was like, what the hell is going on? Why is this thing that I love doing so much not available to me? And when I learned about TMS, just it made so much sense.
Right.
Of course, it's going to be the thing that I value the most. It's going to be taken away from me.
That's what distracts you.
Yeah.
That's great that y'all can put this together.
I have a theory about the low back problem in the truck seat or the car seat. Because I told you guys that if I'm in an open seat where nothing is touching that low back, I can sit there for hours comfortably. But anything that touches it, it'll start within 5 or 10 minutes. Now, since this is oxygen deprivation, caused by the constriction of the capillaries, and you already don't have any blood supply and oxygen in there. Anything that just touches that a little bit maybe adds to that cutting off business of the capillaries and exacerbates that situation. And that may, that's just a theory that I have. May not be any truth to that, but that's what I could think of.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, sounds probable.
But, yeah.
Well, I think to sum another up
go for it.
Oh,
that is the most aggravating thing I have to deal with, besides being debilitated from exercise. Oh, that's a nightmare for me.
How do you relate to it? I got a question. How do you relate to it now, Jay? Now that you know, understand TMS, you understood it 10 years ago, and then the pain came back on you, right? How do you relate to that core conditioning now? Do you still
get
it?
Prepared. Yes, I do. As of July, I had another episode, and this time it's not coming around as fast as before. I'm a lot older now. It's not coming around. Yeah. And before I studied TMS, I recovered, and I got to wear it to the point where I could travel a lot better. And I was realizing what was wrong, and I would just do like Steve said in his book. I would just sit anyway until I would just overcome a lot of that. And then I learned how to distract myself, and then I could travel maybe for hours.
So you've worked on
it. As compared to, say, 15 years ago, I'm having problems with it now because I'm coming back from an episode right now.
Yeah. So, you're coming back through, you're working back through it. Has the week been better for you? Has this week been a better week?
Yeah, this week has been. Last week was not so good, but this week has been better.
Good.
Yes, it has. Last week I had some financial stuff going on and kind of getting on the tail end of that, and that caused some, you know, emotional stress. And this week, as it's that peaked out, like yesterday, actually, I started noticing the back problem less and less as I was getting more and more into that over the weekend and yesterday. So this week so far has been better, and it's because of the emotional displacement on this financial deal I have going on. So
good.
It's all right there as it should be.
Yeah, Jason, it's Tom here. Hi, how you doing? Yeah, Jason. That financial displacement there. That's, I think, on the Rahe Holmes, whatever it's called, list. That's one of the events, life events that causes stress, that causes TMS disease.
Mm.
So yeah, you're right on target with that. Let me ask you something about traveling. I'm glad to hear that you can travel again. When you have traveled recently, how did you travel? By car, plane, train?
A truck, basically. I have a car, but I'm going to have a truck, so I didn't go most
great.
Of my travel
what kind
in a pickup truck.
Yeah. What kind of truck? Well, who makes it?
Toyota Tundra.
Toyota Tundra?
Yeah,
it's a good truck.
I've been thinking
about
getting one.
That's a nice truck. You can roll the hood check for the first 100,000 miles. I got a Toyota 2. Is it 4-wheel drive or 2-wheel drive?
No, it's 2-wheel.
Yeah, great. Wow. Beautiful. Where did you... Oh, there goes my thing. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Oh, okay, my chart light. So where did you travel to, Jason, when you enjoyed traveling?
Where? Oh, my son lives in Little Rock, Arkansas, and from central Louisiana. I want to be able to go comfortably from here to Little Rock to visit with him, and that's very difficult for me at this point. Still having a lot of problems with traveling.
Okay, God, yeah, I can empathize. I love driving. I mean, unfortunately, I'm at the other spectrum. I could just get into, I got a Jeep, I could just get in my Jeep and drive cross country and back 8,000 miles, which I've done, and just love it. Remember the beautiful sceneries I've seen on old Duma 50, and I don't know. Jason, just do it. Just get in that truck, find a nice road with some beautiful scenery, and just drive.
Yeah. I'm having problems with that, and I should. I have faced it down before with that sort of thing, and I won, but I haven't had the courage to do it this time. I am still having some problems. So
I can remember in 2001 when I first had a massive back attack, not being able to drive more than say 3 or 4 miles down the freeway without stopping the car and getting into the neutral back position. So I was like a time bomb everywhere I went. I didn't know if I was going to be incapacitated. So it immediately limited my range of motion to the bank, the grocery store, and PT, you know, and I could just measure it out. When I get beyond a couple of miles on the road, I knew it would start creeping back.
Right.
And it's like it's a palpable, isn't it? You can feel it coming on and limiting your mobility. And you know it's going.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a limit. It's a very physically constricting situation.
Yes.
No doubt, enraging too. It probably adds to the anger.
Jason. Look, if I sorry to interrupt. Have you ever been to Hot Springs, Arkansas?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Well, and I think it'd be a great place for you to go drive to, get in your Tundra, drive there, go to the hot springs and enjoy sitting in the hot springs. That'll take care of your back at the end of the trip. Maybe get some treatments there. And I just think one thing Dr. Sarno would do examining patients would be palpation. And he found that TMSers had in common certain points where they would feel pain that non-TMSers didn't have. And so when you said just touching, if you were in a chair that had a cutout where your back was not touching the back of it, it reminded me of the, you know, palpation that he said. So that's kind of a sign that it is TMS. Have you ever had have you been diagnosed by a doctor? Is there anything that they said was wrong with you?
Well, when I first had, well, most of this, many, many years ago, I was much younger. I had MRIs, CAT scans. Well, I had the CAT scan, not back then. I had CAT scans. Revealed nothing, but about 15 years ago, I had MRIs, and it revealed really nothing. Now, as of late, in the late summer, I had another MRI. Well, it shows some slight bulges and some internal annular fissures. Not herniations, but internal annular fissures that which is desiccation of the disc, which is just dehydration. But I'm 70 years old, you know. It's as Dr. Sarno said, gray hairs of the spine, and probably shouldn't be enough there to be causing all this. Besides, I had this kind of thing way back when the CAT scans and MRIs really showed nothing. So there we are.
Yeah, so you understand the TMS knowledge that's normal gray hair to the spine. So it sounds like you believe consciously that it is TMS, and it's just,
yes.
My recommendation, get in that nice Tundra truck and just go drive and decondition yourself and find a nice road, and maybe let me ask you, have you ever had it like, you know, you can get these heating pads and even massage pads that you can plug into your cigarette lighter when you're driving? Have you ever tried sitting on the road?
Yes, I've tried everything from heating pads to tens, none of that stuff does anything good for me. None of it.
Just get in your Tundra and drive and decondition yourself. Just drive till whatever, because you understand it consciously. TMS, your MRIs, no one ever told you you need surgery. It's greater than spine. There's nothing. So consciously understand it, and maybe you just, you remember in Steve-O's book about how he got deconditioned from, have you read that chapter in his book?
Yes. Yes, I have.
His wife.
Just started sitting, and he sat, and he sat, and until he won, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very painful.
His wife hit his leg to provide a distraction, too, give it a belt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It was painful. It was very painful. But he had a lot of things to be painful about. So I'm thinking about him and maybe hopefully you. We don't need to have our wives beat us with a baseball bat as a distraction. yeah. So I feel like I'm lucky compared to Steve. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just saying, get that Tundra and drive and take the pain. Don't get in a crash or anything. But I'd like to see you drive cross country. You know, 8,000 miles or something in the back.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to go into now? We want to go into the next chapter, and then you and Tom, you and Jay can keep talking. He says, Steve-O, do I have TMS?
That's the second question, most common question that people ask Steve. I don't think he says what the first one is. I think they probably ask him, what is TMS? And this was, do I have TMS? And he says, Steve assumes that every symptom I have is TMS until proven otherwise, because I believe everything our bodies express is due to an unconscious process from conflict, not including dietary deficiencies or external factors, of course, such as asbestos exposure or anything vile in the system. And he prefaces this with a quote from at the head of the chapter from Andy Weil, MD, from his book, Spontaneous Healing. He says, Weil says, I'm convinced that Dr. Sarno is right and that all chronic back pain should be considered TMS until proved otherwise.
I believe that. I agree with that. Do you agree with that, Bruce?
I think 90% of all of these aches and pains people experience have a strong psychogenic component.
And a lot of illnesses
maybe do. Not entirely. There may be... where both of them blend a actual physical injury running in parallel with the TMS process and the two of them fueling each other. I can see that. But I still think 90% of the problems that people, pain problems that people are having in the industrialized West, the Western countries, and now in the East in Japan, are basically psychogenic in origin and are being treated as physically in a way that's counterproductive. The more I look at this and the more I study it, the more I'm sure Sarno is right. I guess that's the degree I'm being convinced, and also my degree of conviction does translate into improvements in my own condition. I do notice it unfolding day by day. It is the matter of getting convinced, intellectually convinced. You have to
accept that diagnosis. Yeah, and deep. Yeah. Good. Yeah, not just intellectually.
Yeah, can I mention something that Panda Girl said in the chat room? I think it's really relevant to everything we're talking about tonight. She says, I had an aha moment this morning about TMS. TMS is a software problem. I've been thinking that I had a hardware, which represents the physical problem, but software can be debugged, rebooted, reinstalled, etc. Our thinking is the software. Nothing wrong with my hardware. I like the way she put that. She used some symbolism there, guys. And but the way she said it, it you can keep it stayed in your head, you know. So I just wanted to mention that from the chat room.
Well, I think it does get back to neuroscience.
That back problem when you're driving is a software problem.
There you go.
I think what we're saying about neuroscience. I think I said it today in the forum. It really gets down to systems analysis. That's the way you approach these kind of networks that constitute the central nervous system. Some big time number crunching.
Yes. Does anybody got any in general questions about TMS? Because this chapter is Steve-O, do I have TMS? Now, he's got probably 50 things here that would tell you if you got TMS or not. But I believe if anybody has a question like that about anything, then we got enough people on here that we can probably, you know, help out. You know what I mean?
Well, the first thing Steve says, though, is that you should get it checked out by a TMS experienced doctor. And this will include a physical exam to check the objective function, looking at your imaging, and to seek out any tender points on palpitation, trigger points, the ones we've been talking about. If the tests show normal herniations and joint wear and tear, you will leave with a TMS diagnosis, which is a great prognosis. And he says for people who cannot actually go to a TMS doctor, those who cannot visit a TMS practitioner, they must rely on their own intuition, the internet, books, and a deepening self-awareness.
He says I can point out the obvious in the absence of a TMS trained physician, get a general exam to rule out any ailments that may need medical intervention, then begin asking yourself questions. You can observe your life at a level beyond the immediately apparent and come to a reasonable conclusion based on the information in Dr. Sarno's books and hopefully from what you find here by simply gleaning your house. And basically, I assume the house is the body or the emotions or both for that matter. But
I wonder what he means by gleaning exactly. I saw that word and it stood out on the page. Has anyone got any input?
To me, I related it with cleaning the house. I mean, you know, just getting all trash out.
He uses this word
getting all the stinking, yeah, gleaning. I don't know.
Kind of like it's maybe a pun on the word cleaning, and gleaning suggesting kind of a learning. You've got to understand what's going on inside your house. It's kind of the knowledge therapy idea, maybe, is my best guess.
Yeah, Steve does like to use those puns, doesn't he?
Oh, he loves them.
Yeah. And you think about them a while, and then they draw you in, and they give you a new understanding of what he's trying to suggest.
Before Bruce, we go into some of these things, it's just going to tell you what the TMS, you know, you probably got TMS if this is happening. Has anybody got a question before we go into this?
I just thought it was really interesting how so many of them had to do with the TMS personality. That was just striking for me. And I guess, you know, since it is a mind-body condition, you're going to want to start with the mind because that's where it all starts. But I don't know. It's getting pretty late. Do we have time to go through all of them? Maybe we can go through them really quickly.
Okay, that's what I was going to do.
I was going to let Bruce call them out.
Some of these things stood out in my mind, and I just have a few of them highlighted. Steve provides a checklist. Do I have TMS? A checklist. And he says, have you suffered from pain on and off for many years that has neither gotten better or worse? He notes that a back or knee pain or hip or neck pain cannot continue indefinitely unless there's nervous system involvement, because the body heals itself eventually. And that's part of your checklist too, that you should be formulating about your symptoms. And he says, are you a perfectionist, goal or performance driven, anxious and restless, irritable or volatile, compulsive?
Oh, yes.
Or are you antisocial, quickly agitated by life and people? And he says, has there been a big change that you're beginning to recover from? Is there something major coming up or recently added? Have you recently achieved a goal or new level of life, which is like phase four TMS? Do you compulsively engage in repetitive acts? One thing I thought, do you avoid conflict at all cost?
Oh, so many people do that.
Oh, yeah.
So many of us do that.
Do you want a sense of control in every situation?
So many of us want that, don't we? We want to control situations.
Do you avoid people when you can? Who doesn't, right? This would be a great world without all those people. What I mean is obsessive avoidance of all people, hermit-like.
That's extreme.
Yeah. Does your pain flare up before athletic competitions or any type of scenario where you will be observed or judged? I've certainly noticed this. I'll sit around in the climbing gym and not do a climbing problem for fear of failing in front of people. And I wait till they're out of there. And then I rehearse it by myself so I know I can do it. And then I do it in front of them because I've gotten over that. I can think of all kinds of things I do that way compulsively. The rehearsal syndrome. He says, do you grind your teeth? Were your parents heavy negative thinkers, heavy positive drinkers? A whole list. Were they drug addicts, noncommittal, critical, absent, apathetic toward you, constantly arguing? Has one committed suicide? Were you adopted or felt abandoned? He says, have you had a major relationship or career change? He says one thing at the end, and you might emphasize this point. You can be certain you have TMS if you have shifting symptoms. It is the signature characteristic of the disorder as described in Chapter 10. So we got through that rather rapidly anyway. So that's his TMS checklist in a nutshell, Steve's checklist.
What I saw that stood out is, do you worry excessively about everything? And when I was growing up, my whole family was the Warriors. Our last name should have been the Warriors. And now, on the other hand, to me, I started, in everything I'm talking about, everything I talk about on the forum, everything, I started studies at a real early age. And I picked up a book by a dude named Dale Carnegie. And when I was 7 years old, and this guy starts, when I was 7 years old, and this guy starts telling me how to have confidence, how to believe in myself. I'm going around my house, my sister's worrying, is worrying, my other sister's worrying. If I try to tell them something Dale Carnegie said, they beat me up. So, I'm trying to do my best to help with the Dale Carnegie stuff. But mom's sitting there, she's worrying, she's looking out the window, she's thinking one of the kids is going to be hurt, before they get back from the job or before they get back from the skating rink. Everybody's worrying, and we all know now that the more we worry, then the more it creates stress, which creates tension, which creates pain, right? So we want to work on, trying to keep, do we worry? Well, some people relate that I don't care if I don't worry. No, we can care with all of our hearts, but we don't have to put the pressure of worry, on us. And we can recondition ourselves not to be, so much pressure on ourselves. I think worry is putting a lot of pressure on you. And so, for all of us, let's just try to have a better week with less worries and work on having those less worries by staying present, staying in the moment, staying in the now, and knowing that you know, life's going to be good to us because it brings to us what we believe in our minds anyway, right? So, guys, this has been great tonight.
Right.
Ali's saying bye, and Deepster's already gone, and people's checking out on us. So I just want everybody to know that we really appreciate y'all showing up tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jay, we really appreciate you coming in and again giving us a you know, something great to think about. Bruce always got a great summary, always keeping it, you know. Tennis Tom, man, your brother, we're glad you came.
Always.
You have a good week. And Forrest, okay. You always keep it going, and we really appreciate you being here every week, Forrest. And we had some new people, Surfside. I don't think Surfside's been here before, but I'm glad Surfside came. And Enjoy, we always love what Enjoy has to say. She's so full of wisdom. She's a very, very smart person. She's got an awesome mental list, and it is exploding, guys. So
I love you, too.
We love you, Enjoy. We love you with all of our hearts. You're so powerful with a voice that won't be denied. And Tennis Tom, we want to hear them stories, buddy.
Okay. Best, man. Thanks. Good
all
job.
All of you are. Yeah, all of you are. All of you are so super. Montana Mom came in here tonight. Montana Mom, you there? Montana
nope.
Mom came in here tonight. She told us some of her stories, and her stories were awesome. And we're so glad that Montana Mom got to make it here. Gosh, you know, I could go on. I don't think I left out many people. But if I did leave out anybody, it wasn't intentional. Y'all guys have been super. And if anybody's got anything to say, say it right now. Just pour it out there. Pour your heart out, guys.
I'm going to work on the worrying this week.
All right, man.
Good
that's,
to hear.
That's great. That's
you got
great.
It, man.
That's
I needed to hear that. Yes.
Good to hear.
Okay,
we're here
folks.
For you, brother.
I'll see y'all next week. Thank you. Good
okay,
night.
Okay, brother. Okay, God bless you, and we'll see you. Okay, I'm cutting it off, guys. I'm going to cut the recording off. Good night.